Hey guys, welcome to Forging the Path. This is a podcast that's all about empowering men to become who God created us to be. My name is Adam. Really grateful that you're here. Today, I got to sit down with Eric Forrestal. Eric is the creator and the owner of Workforce Renegades. You can check them out at workforcerenegades.com. It's a company that's all about better awareness, better communication, and better results. In this conversation with Eric, we dive in a little bit to some of his story. We talk about Workforce Renegades, why it's his passion, what he does with it, and we talk about the DISC assessment. If you're not familiar with that, you will be at the end of this episode. DISC, DISC assessment. It's all about helping people communicate better. And Eric, at the very end of this episode, also shares a little bit about what his relationship with God has been like and what it's like recently. God's doing some really cool stuff in his life. And so he talks a little bit about that at the end of the episode. Now, I will forewarn you, there is a little bit of language in this episode. So if you're listening to this podcast, like some of our listeners do in the car and you got kids, I just want to give you that warning right now. There's some language in this episode, so please be aware of that and use your best judgment if you got kids in the room while this is playing. Other than that, thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show.
My name is Eric. I am born and bred in Wisconsin. I was originally born in the Milwaukee area. That's where a lot of my extended family is from. And when I was about 5, 6, my parents moved us out to Walworth County. Specifically East Troy. And
out in the country.
Out in the country, yeah. It was, I loved East Troy. I still love East Troy. Still close with my family, still out that way. Have an Alpine Valley in your backyard.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
You do a lot of skiing?
A lot of snowboarding, yeah.
Snowboarding.
Yeah, a lot of snowboarding.
And then the summertime concerts.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I was, I worked out there. Yeah. East Troy was a lot of fun. It's a lot cooler than it was. It's a lot cooler now than it was when I was growing up. I mean, it was definitely a one stoplight kind of town.
Yeah, it wasn't so cool back then.
It wasn't. Yeah, outside of Alpine Valley. But moved out to East Troy when I was about 5. That's where I went to school. My parents split up when I was 6 years old. Right. And so shortly after we moved out to East Troy, they split up. And so I split my time in East Troy and Waterford, but always southeastern Wisconsin. And from there, I had a single mom for a couple of years.
You have any siblings?
I do. I have a lot of siblings, actually.
Okay.
So I have a blood brother. I have one brother that, from the same mom, same dad. And when I was about 8 or 9, my mom met a fellow named Randy, who became my stepdad. And he brought along 3 kids. So he added 2 brothers and a sister to the situation.
Like the Brady Bunch.
That's what they used to call us. My mom used to sign the Christmas cards, the Brady Bunch.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have that. That was kind of, that was my primary family. I have another stepbrother and another stepsister on my dad's side.
Yeah.
He remarried as well. They were a little bit older than me, so I wasn't as connected with them. But on my mom's side, I had 3 older brothers and an older sister. So I was the youngest of 5 kids.
Wow.
And we were together all the time. I mean, that was it was a situation where we split a little bit of time at our respective other parents' house, but we were together all the time, family vacations. Now when I introduce them, they're my brothers and my sister.
Got it.
Like we still do family dinners. We all still live around the same area. I got a baker's dozen nieces and nephews now, and yeah, we still do every other week family dinner. We just, took a family vacation. So it's kind of like, it was this modge podge of, divorced families, shit happens. We got together and now we're stronger than a lot of families that,
You got to be the fun uncle, Eric.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised.
I pride myself on that. But yeah, that's how I grew up. I was the youngest. I was definitely, it was kind of a horse race between me and my, one of my brothers, Jason, between who is the biggest troublemaker.
Mm.
So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. What do you mean by trouble though? Like mischievous,
like fun trouble, fun trouble. Like every American boy should get into?
Yeah,
or
fun
are
trouble,
you talking like violence and carnage?
No, nothing like that. Okay. I'll say this. We gave our parents the most headaches.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was a horse race on who gave the biggest headaches. So.
Okay.
I think I win in the end just because I, you know, I was the youngest. So by the time he got out of the house, I still had time to make trouble.
give us one story of you getting into trouble.
Oh gosh. One story. Okay. So it was in high school and I was the, it was my junior year. And do you remember the Powder Puff football games?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I was in football. I was a big athlete up until about my junior year. And, it was a Powder Puff football game. I had my, you know, I had my football jersey on. We were the coaches.
Yeah.
Cause that's how you do it in Powder Puff.
Yep,
and
yep.
For some reason, one of my, I don't dare me to do anything because if you double dare me, I'll probably do it. Yeah, it was during a Powder Puff football game, and one of my friends decided it would be fun to dare me to streak across the field in my boxers. And so, of course, I had to do that. Now, at the time, my parents were in Arizona, and so it wasn't the smartest thing to do, but looking back, it was definitely a lot of fun, and it's a cool story to tell, but that kind of ended, I don't want to say ended my football career, but that kind of was a pivotal point that A, gave my mom a pretty big headache, and then B, it kind of put me on a different course as far as sports and school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did they kick you off the football team?
They didn't kick me off. I mean, they came down on me pretty hard, and I remember looking at the coach and going, hey man, I'm not going to go pro. Like, this is East Troy football. You know, and my mom at that point, you know, she kind of told me, she was like, look, man, you can either stop getting in trouble and get straight A's, or you can get a job, but that's how you're going to get gas money. Like, I'm not going to give you gas money. I'm not going to give you money for a car if you're messing up at school.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. Tough love. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think she thought that I was going to go for sports and straight A's. And instead I was like, all right, I'll go get a job.
Cool,
you know?
Mom, I'll go work.
Yeah. And so that honestly, that was, that kind of put me into the workforce at that point in time.
Got it.
Which was, looking back, I think it really set the tone for where I'm at now.
Yeah.
Cause I knew I could work, and then I always had I've worked since then.
Right.
I've always had a job since then.
Well, so. Yeah. And we should probably tell the audience, I mean, the reason I know Eric, the reason he's on the podcast is, well, I guess it goes back to a year ago, we were both realtors with the same, you know, brand.
Yep.
And then more recently, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but Eric being entrepreneurial, being a great connector with a lot of people and having a heart to help people has something called Workforce Renegades. But we'll get into that later.
Yep.
I'm getting ahead. But the reason I say that is not only so that our audience knows, you know, we met in the area of real estate, but that I could tell right away from knowing you day one, this is a go-getter. This is a guy who's driven. This is a guy who isn't afraid to put himself out there,
yeah.
Go meet a bunch of people, work long hours for himself. He's got that entrepreneurial bent. And so I just appreciated that first time I met you, first time I even heard of you. Even I hadn't met you, I just heard about you through other realtors. I'm like, that guy's cool. That guy's, he's going for it.
And I'm glad that's the word on the street.
That was the word on the street I was on that day. Yeah, it was all good stuff.
Yeah.
So what is Workforce Renegades? Tell our audience, like, okay, cool. It sounds like he does some sort of coaching. I heard about DISC. I heard assessment. Ooh, what's the bird's eye view of Workforce Renegades?
Yeah. I mean, so basically it's, I want to help organizations cultivate a culture of positivity that, you know, people are happy to be there, that they enjoy being there, and that the communication is there. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest struggle that a lot of organizations, at least my clients have, is they either have internal silos because people don't know how to communicate with each other, or they have external difficulties dealing with clients, right? Mm-hmm. So anyone in sales or customer service, it's always like, we have our clients that we really enjoy, and we have our clients that we don't enjoy.
You tolerate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can think that with literally anyone in life, anyone that you have a relationship with. So, you know, we have people that we just gravitate to because we like them better. And 9 times out of 10, it's because we communicate with them better.
Of course.
It's because it's our style of communication, you know. When we first met, we communicate very similar. And so when we sat at a table, we kind of had to look at the clock and be like, oh, we've been here for like an hour and a half, and and you meet people like that, and it's like, how can I turn everyone into that? Like, how can I do that with everyone?
Right.
And I think that being in sales, a lot of people naturally progress to that. And what I want to do is I want to expedite that for people that might struggle with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where a lot of people know how to read the room because of the experience that they had, where they've been around people long enough, where people, a lot of times they talk about, you know, being able to mirror someone or being, you know, for those type of things. Where I wanted to get deeper into that. And culture is so important. And all the things that I learned and all the, you know, kind of what took me up to Workforce Renegades was, you know, I'd always start at a position. And I love that you said that you noticed a trend, but I always started at a position at, you know, entry-level position, 100% commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd work my way up. And all of a sudden, I'd be the best at sales or something like
that.
Work
your way up to leadership.
Yep. And then people ownership. Would be like, oh, hey, you're good at this. Can you train people? Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden, I'd train them. And then they'd become really good. And I was like, hey, we want to give you some more say in what we do. So here, you know, now you're on the leadership board. And then something would happen. I mean, I'll be honest, I would get bored. Mm-hmm. I'd get bored out of business, you know, and you can attribute it a lot of that.
And like, you jump ship and start over.
And I think something that I pride myself on is I am not scared to start over, man. Mm-hmm. Like I am not scared to like take everything away from me now. And I would not have a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a little different now cause I got a kid and I don't have that big of a car. So I don't think that we would, you know, the sleeping arrangement would be a little bit difficult now, but you know what I mean? Like I have no problem starting over. And so I thought, what if I just go help businesses out that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll give you an example. I'm working with a brewery in Milwaukee right now where, you know, great brewery, but they just wanted to go from good to great, you know? And it's fun because I came in, they're like, hey, we have this message that we want to deliver. We don't know how to deliver it, you know, about a couple things. They're growing. They went from 5 employees to, you know, now they have like 25 employees. And I came in and basically, you know, they're contracting me, but I came in acting as if I was in that entry level position. I was like, I got to figure out what's going on. So, I mean, last Sunday I was in there mopping floors and I had to work with the shift leader about how to delegate. And I was like, tell me to mop. I'm not mopping the floor until you tell me to mop the floor, you know? And then she's like, okay, Eric, go mop the floor. So then I mopped the floor, figured that out. And then I was able to come back to the leadership team and be like, all right, these are my findings. Like by coming in on the entry level position, these are my findings of how we can work with our communication.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it helps with assessments, all those things. But yeah, it's a mixed bag. I mean, I was really good at sales. So a lot of times I start with coming in on sales and then they're like, oh, hey, we could use you to help with our culture too. And then things are running on full tilt. So I've had a couple clients that I came in working with sales, fixed, you know, found sales solutions and then worked with the production team on how to communicate that way.
Yeah.
So it's consulting and coaching. I just do things in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah.
Cause I think a lot of coaches and consultants start with, you know, they start at the top and they coach the leadership team and all that. And I think it's important to start at the bottom and start with the actual workforce and work my way to the top that way. You know what I mean?
Where'd the name come from?
Honestly, Workforce Renegades, I wanted to work with the workforce.
Yeah.
So like I value blue collar. Growing up, my stepdad, he was a construction worker.
Yeah.
And so he was that dude that, you know, I never got grounded. I just had to go work with my stepdad, you know? So whenever I got in trouble, it was like, all right.
Cause it was work,
but it was like, you know, I'll never forget the story. You know, I got into trouble and my mom was quick to find solutions for it. But I was getting, middle school was probably the roughest time I gave my parents. And my stepdad, instead of sending me off to a boys' school or anything like that, my stepdad looked at my mom and just went, I'll pick him up after school. And so for months, he would pick me up after school and I would just go work with my stepdad after school. And he was like, we're not sending you away. You're just going to come work with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was that guy that he didn't let you stand around. If he'd point out a pile of 2x4s and say, see that pile of 2x4s? Move it over there. And then I'd do that. I'm like, all right. He's like, okay, cool. And I'll move it back. Just to keep me busy.
Just to
stay in the workforce. And so.
Because he didn't know how to read the blueprint.
Frame up a wall. And, you know, being the youngest of four brothers, like the jobs that I got, you know, it had to go through four different you know, three other dudes sure. to say no to the job before I got it. So I was the golfer, I was the bitch, I was that. But I pride myself in being part of the workforce. And then I always did things just a little bit different. And so that's where the renegade part kind of came from. Where I always did things. I wasn't scared to do things a different way.
Yeah.
And do things kind of different than way things are structured. And so it's just clever. And then of course the domain name was there, so I had to go with it.
Yeah, man. I gotta say, I love the name. But one thing your stepdad did that's really cool, he, like you said, he didn't send you away. He actually drew you in. Mm-hmm. So when your kid's going through a hard time, you know, all right, kid, you're going to spend more time with me.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful thing. I think we could learn from that too. That's exactly what middle schoolers and high schoolers probably need more of in terms of 100%. Discipline. Like, not necessarily, you know, go to your room, but more like,
you got to spend more time with
right
me.
Here.
Yeah.
You know, and you're on my hip now, and we're going to be hanging out more.
Yeah. And I was not easy. I'm going to say that. I hated it. I hated the idea at the time in middle school, man.
Yeah.
And like, I of course fought back on it a lot, but it was like, it was hard to argue when he was sitting there in the parking lot. I couldn't run. I ran away once for like a few hours and he tracked me down and I was like, okay, I guess that's not going to work, you know? And so, yeah. And, but all that, you know, because of that, that's not why I named it Workforce Renegades. I'm just saying that I had a lot of pride in doing a lot of blue collar work, and the way I wanted to do it was really work with the workforce. I really wanted to deal with the workforce, because in any organization that becomes bigger, the workforce is your pulse line. I mean, you need a workforce, right? Especially right now, people are struggling to hire, you know, and it's keep the ones that you have and make them great. Treat them really good, because if you can focus on your company retention and your organization's retention, that's going to solve your hiring problem.
100%.
Everyone, as soon as, you know, someone messes up a lot, so many organizations don't want to sit and coach the people that they have. They would much rather just go find that person with experience.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where that kind of came from.
All right, let me take a quick minute and thank all of our sponsors. Thanks, S2F Installation. To all you managers, engineers, or facilities maintenance people out there, if you need some ideas to better manage your warehouse, call my friend Ray at S2F Installation. He can help guide you in the right direction. It's a company designed to serve. 262-470-6882. Thanks, Phantom Creek Builders. Phantom Creek Builders is a premier interior remodeling company that specializes in kitchen and bathroom remodeling, as well as finished basements. Find them at phantomcreekbuilders.com. Thanks, Michael Creed team at Luminate Home Loans. Whether you're looking to buy or refinance, there's no one better than the Michael Creed team at Luminate Home Loans. To get a conversation started, text FTP to 262-696-9048. And thank you, Zastro Family Real Estate, powered by Realty Executives Integrity. My wife and I love guiding people to achieving their real estate goals and giving them an amazing experience along the way. Reach out to us today to discuss your real estate goals. You can call or text 262-725-2855. You can also find us online by searching Zastro Family Real Estate. All right, back to the show. Tell me about this, Eric. You're talking about communication, understanding other people's communication and adapting so that you can relate to them. What about, let me play devil's advocate. What about authenticity? What about being the kind of guy who, you know, doesn't change based on the day-to-day circumstances, what you think people might want to hear? Right. So there's a line there that I think it's important to understand. You probably talk about this in coaching.
Yeah, I think you have to be okay with having your message not heard then. And that's where it is. And so the biggest thing is I completely understand. And especially if you are in an adaptive state for too long, it kind of messes with you.
Yeah.
So I think what I always let people know is, A, if you're okay, if you have a message that you want to deliver, this is how you can deliver it to different types of people. Right. And so I'm not saying, hey, just, you know, be a people pleaser and communicate with people all the time the way that they want to be communicated with. What I'm saying is, if you have a message that you want to deliver, Like, it's not on them to understand it. It's on you to understand them. Mm. And so that's kind of where that line is, where, yeah. where if I'm okay with that message not being delivered, you know,
yeah.
and I'm just like, I'm going to be me. And this is the message that I'm trying to deliver. If you want to hear it, cool. If you don't, also cool. That's fine. But if I'm trying to be intentional about delivering a message to a particular person, they're not going to change their communication to try to understand my message.
Yeah, don't be mad at them.
Right.
It reminds me of the saying, not that I would be understood, but that I would understand.
100%. And I think that if we spend more time understanding people, they're going to understand us 10 times more.
Sure.
And we it kind of falls in line with, you know, stoicism, where it's control the things that you can control. That's the biggest thing about stoicism, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I really take pride in a lot of that philosophy is that. And so it's like, cool, I can control the way I communicate with people yep. and the message that I deliver. I can't control if they're understanding me. I can just do the best to my ability. And trust me, there's so many times where I adapt my communication and try to send a message and it still falls. Like mm-hmm. it still doesn't hit. And I just have to be okay with that. But I can sit back and go, look, I tried the best I could.
Yeah.
I tried to deliver the message in 4 different ways, 4 different packages, you know, and it still didn't fall. And I just I have to be okay with that, because I can go to sleep at night going, hey, I did everything that I could to deliver that message. And if they didn't, you know, there's some people that refuse to hear things, but
of course.
But I do agree with you, because, you know, I understand, and I think that's something that I definitely let people know, is you don't want to stay in that adaptive state for too long, but just if you have to work intentionally. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I'm a manager or a leader of people,
yep.
I'm going to speak to half the crowd. Half the crowd's going to agree with me. The other half is going to think I've lost my mind. So I have to be able to deliver my message in a couple different ways, right? Mm-hmm. So you have multiple kids, right?
Yeah, 3 cool. daughters. Yeah.
Awesome. I can almost guarantee you probably don't talk to all 3 of your daughters the exact same way.
No.
Right?
No, they're 3 very different individuals.
Right. And so,
yep.
but you're with them all the time. You know. Like, these are things that you've spent years and years and years understanding and knowing.
Yeah.
So what I want to do is I want to expedite that for people and yeah. kind of give that blueprint of how to, where you can start to kind of understand people's communication within the first few meetings of someone or first few interactions of someone. Mm-hmm. And then also it helps you understand them more, so you don't get rubbed the wrong way. Right. Mm-hmm. So if someone's more direct with me, I can go, okay, they're not a jerk. That's just the way they communicate. You know what I mean? I'm not going to take it personal
right.
when I write, a paragraph text message with all of the emojis, all of the exclamation points, and they type back, okay.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, and I think that a lot of times, like, us extroverted people are like, we have this all written out, it's the perfect thing, and then we get the okay, and we're like, well, give me something, give me some sort of smiley face, you know? And oh, man. So,
nope. Do you use emojis?
Nah, it depends who I'm talking to be honest
oh,
with
really?
You.
Oh, really? You yeah, will 100%. Sometimes.
Yep. It depends who I'm like talking it. To because
okay. I never do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, think of it this way. Like if someone does a lot
yeah.
and they are an over communicator,
yeah.
they want to be over communicated with. Right. And so they want all the details. They want to know how you're feeling. Where if someone's more direct, like me and you, you're a very direct guy.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you let me know, hey, I'm going to be here at this time. Now, if I would have said, cool, this is how my morning went and all this stuff, you'd have been like, oh, read all this. So instead, I just kind of gave you a thumbs up. I was like, cool, man. Yeah. Confirmation that I got your message. I'll be there. And I know that was good enough for you. And I yeah. knew that was the way that you communicate with, yeah. right? Now, take someone else, like someone that I was dealing with this morning wrote me a nice text message. And I said, cool, I'm just going to go grab a cup of coffee. I should be there around 10 o'clock. And I could tell that's the way. And so then that's kind of the basis of how the relationship goes, right? And so wow. it's not just that first interaction, but now, like, you do that 3, 4, 5 times. Now this person is a lot more comfortable with me because I'm communicating with them on their level. And that was something that I controlled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, I have the advantage of working with my wife, who can do that.
Like, yeah.
Because we'll understand each other and other people enough to know, hey, Claire, this is all you.
Yeah.
Like, go for it. They want the feels.
I love because I've gotten emails from both of you, and you'll have like line items. You'll be like 1, 2, 3, 4, and then Claire says a little bit more in paragraph how she feels for him.
Oh yeah, oh
it's
yeah.
Great. I just love the thread because I'm like, can see, you know. And if you and here's the thing is, if you're aware of this and if you are intentional about looking for these things, it's easy.
Yeah.
So if you start looking at people's emails, and you know, I want to touch on that too, is we live in such a digital world today. And I think a lot of people struggle with reading things the wrong way through emails.
Because it's such a low form of communication.
Right. But if you actually really look at it, you can. Like if you start to kind of figure out how a person is on the outside, their text messages and emails make a lot more sense. A lot of times with people, a reason why they feel more comfortable over email is because they're not going to say, and now, trust me, in the entire world, there's people that go rogue. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, I get what you're saying, but you got to think of it this way, where, like, if we talk in terms of DISC, okay, an introvert, a C specifically, is they need time to process things, they need time to formulate an opinion, do research, things like that, to make sure that what they're saying is legit.
Right.
And there's other people, high I's, high D's, we're just going to say it.
Yeah.
We're just going to say it and hope we're right a lot of times, you know what I mean?
Can you walk us through the DISC for people who aren't familiar? D-I-S-C.
The best way I can describe DISC is if you go out to eat with a group of people and the waiter comes, ask you, you know, what can I get you? You'll always have that one person who answers right away. And they know what they're getting because everywhere they go, they get the same damn thing. I'll take a burger, medium rare, fries on the side. They know, no matter, they know they're hungry and they know they like burgers. They don't need to look at the entire menu. That's about as far as it goes.
Okay.
And then you have the waiter gets to the next person. That's the D, right?
That's
the
D.
The burger is the,
got it.
I'm very direct in what I want. I'm going to tell you exactly what I want. That's it. Then the waiter looks at the next person and the next person's like, oh my God, I haven't even looked at the menu. Can you come back to me? Because they spent the entire time, as soon as they got there, they spent the entire time talking to everyone.
Of course.
Yeah, because they honestly, and at the end of the day, they don't really care what they eat. They're there because of the people. They're excited about the people around the table, the interactions that they're having. And so their focus is talking to everyone, right?
Yeah.
And then you have someone, and then the waiter looks at the next person. And this person is indecisive. Right. And so they start kind of like quietly asking, like, oh my God, what are you going to get? Are you going to get the chicken sandwich? You know, I know they're getting the burger. What's good here?
What like, would you recommend?
What would you recommend? Right. Yeah, and so they're kind of like, they don't want to make the wrong decision. They don't want to make the decision. Then they don't want to make the wrong decision. But again, it kind of comes down to, they're not so focused on what they're going to eat. They're more focused on like what's good for the table, right? So it's like, hey, if I get the gigantic nachos, will you guys eat some, right? And so they're gonna a little bit more that way. They're gonna be a little bit more indecisive, and then you have that last person, the C type. I'm sorry, the person that I just talked about was the S.
Yep.
So they're a little bit more of the steadiness, and then you know you have the last person who, as soon as they found out where they were going, they looked it up online, and they sat and studied the menu and every different. Mm-hmm. way. And so when they got to the restaurant, they already knew what they were getting.
Yeah.
You know? And so you can kind of decipher it that way. You have extroverts and you have introverts.
Yeah.
Okay. And so a D and an I is extrovert. That's what you got to look at. And then the C and the S are introverted.
Yeah.
And then you have people that are task oriented and you have people that are people oriented.
Yeah.
So the D and the C are task oriented.
Got it.
So they were the ones that, you know, the D knows what they're getting. They're very direct. The C is going to look it up, but still they're very focused on the menu.
Right.
And then you have the people oriented people, the I and the S, they're just happy to be there.
Yeah.
They don't care what they get to eat. They're just happy that everyone's there and that everyone's having fun.
Yeah. They're people focused.
Yeah. So that's the biggest thing. And now like the reason why, you know, a lot of times I don't bring DISC up until the end and I just tell people I'm helping them communicate.
Yep.
DISC is a tool. You know what I mean? It's a tool that I use to kind of show this communication. And also I get a lot of people where it's like, oh, well, it depends on what restaurant I go to. Cause I say, you know, how would you identify yourself? There's some people that they know exactly the type of person they are. And then other people are like, oh, well, it depends where I'm going. It depends who I'm with, all this stuff. And that's where it comes down to natural and adaptive, right? And so if we're comfortable, if we're in a good situation, we're comfortable with people, and we're in a comfortable situation, that's going to be the natural kind of way of doing things.
Sure,
now,
sure.
And think about this, like in the client world or in the business world, if in a we're in an adaptive state and we act differently. So if we're stressed out, so if we're with someone that we're not familiar with, if we're in a place that we're not familiar with, if we get into an argument, not an argument with a client, but a heavy discussion with a client that we've never been, we have to adapt our communication, right? And so I found these things pretty wild where I was wondering what was going wrong with a lot of my relationships and in work and in my personal life when mm-hmm. I first kind of started to discover DISC, right? Mm-hmm. So I realized that there was a glaring thing between my adaptive and natural communication.
Oh, wow.
Right? So in my natural way, I was a very extroverted person. I was a very high I, and I was steady, so I enjoyed people, okay? And then in my adaptive state, my D would go up, my I would go down, and my S would go way down. So basically in my adaptive state, I would just became demanding. And I remember looking at this chart going, whoa, okay, I got to remember that whenever I get stressed out with a client, whenever I get stressed out with a relationship, to ease up, to take a deep breath. You know, and then it's funny because a year after, you know, I take a DISC assessment every year, and that's about personal growth, because then I realized I was able to match it up a little bit more, where yeah. I'm the same person now in my natural state as in my adaptive state.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Does that all make sense? I feel
yeah,
like
yeah. No, that
a
was
bit.
Really I really like your to explain DISC at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. That's a really great overview.
And now that you know it. Here's the messed up thing.
Yeah.
Is now that you know it, and anyone listening, now that you heard that, you can't go out to dinner now.
Without thinking about
without
that.
Thinking about
of
that.
Of course, of course. What would you say to someone who, like me, would say, like, dude, I hate labels. I yeah. don't want to be put into a box.
I think the biggest thing is it's about how you communicate.
Okay.
So this isn't about, like, if you want to do deep inner work about how you, you know, how you feel or kind of how you process things, I think that Enneagram is really good for that. I think Myers-Briggs is good for that. DISC is the way you communicate.
DISC is communication, not necessarily personality.
Correct. And so it's not that. And also, here's the thing too, is it's not meant to put you in a box, but what it's meant to do is make you aware.
Yeah.
So if you need to alter something, where if you look at a relationship and you're like, okay, I'm struggling with this relationship, it makes you aware of it. Right.
Yeah.
So it kind of helps you find your blind spots.
Can you tell me where DISC came from?
Yeah, it was a psychologist in the 1930s. I don't have his name written down, but yeah, it was basically looked at human interactions, right? And that's where it's as simple. And the reason why I enjoy DISC a lot is because you can, it's easy. It's four things. Okay. Are they extroverted or are they introverted?
Yeah.
Are they focused more on the task at hand or are they focused more about the people in the room? And so you can really easily identify people that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it came from the 1930s. I know a lot of other like personality tests are from like ancient times, but no, this has just been around since the 1930s. And it was a group of psychologists that studied people a lot and realized that people are extroverted, people are introverted, people are task-oriented. And
see, I like DISC a lot. I don't necessarily love the other ones that you mentioned, but DISC is, this is what I appreciate. I heard from a friend a couple days ago that the CIA got really into DISC.
Yeah.
When they talked about like turning assets and like
yeah.
doing their work, finding what type of communication style a person had and then meeting them on that level.
Yeah.
And it requires a lot of listening. Like if you were trying to, you know, convince somebody to give you some information and you would befriend them. And then maybe over the course of dinner or conversation or coffee, you hear that they're son really wants to go to Harvard. Like
yeah.
the CIA would bring that up 6 months later and say, hey, if you give us this information, like your son's got a full ride to Harvard. We want you to know. And it's not about torturing.
Right.
It's like you're rewarding them, but it requires like listening, getting to know their tendencies and cognition. It was wild to me. I couldn't believe, like, no way. Like, is that real? I thought maybe you would know. Because I don't know if that's a real, legit...
So,
did the CIA use DISC in the Cold War era?
Like, I mean, there's
to turn assets and things like that?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I haven't done that, the extensive history on it. Okay. But now that you mention it, it makes me want to go Google it.
It kind of makes sense, but I don't... Yeah, I'm like, oh, man, that's wild.
And I think it's really important, too. And when I coach people and when I get in, you know, whenever I do a presentation, you know, it's really important to keep your integrity with this. Because here's this thing of... You know, you're able to communicate with someone on their level, right? Mm-hmm. And really get to know them and kind of adapt to them. And it's really important that it doesn't turn into a form of manipulation, right?
Yeah.
And so I've been in sales my whole life. And so there's been a lot of times in you know, relationship with women or anything like that, where it's kind of like, I can never date a sales guy because they think I'm trying to sell them something, right?
Yeah.
And it's... You have to keep your integrity about it, right? So if you have a message that you want to deliver, that's how I use DISC. So it all revolves around that. It's so many people are misunderstood, so many people aren't hearing you, or if I have a message to deliver, I'm only talking to half the crowd. Sure. How can I alter my message that way?
Yeah.
And so it's funny that you bring up like with the CIA and things like that, because sales in general and persuasion and all these things can be used to manipulate the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always make sure that when I'm coaching to say, look, this is a tool. It's just like if you learn self-defense classes, you use it for when you need to defend yourself and you don't just go around punching people.
Yeah. Hopefully you use it for good.
You use it for good. Right. And so same thing with DISC and to be able to communicate with someone, it works in my family a lot where there's my big family. It's kind of whoever speaks the loudest is the rightest. Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those situations. Yeah. And sometimes there's like some internal things going on. Nothing ever like bad. Like we're together every other week, but sometimes me and my mom have really deep discussions because she'll, you know, maybe her feelings will be hurt about something and this and that. And I'll talk to her and I'm kind of the only one that can bring things up to my mom and my family. Yeah. She's head honcho. I mean, she's the runner of the family. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But now as everyone's getting older and they have their own families, there's different heads of the households. So now when we all get together, it's not the same, you know? So here, my mom for 20 plus years was the head of the household. And now everyone is the head of their own household.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes there's a lot of conflict in there, you know? And so I'm able to kind of mediate certain things and make sure that everyone's understands each other. Right.
Interesting.
And so that's kind of the main thing where if you can become a master communicator, like you can help a lot of people out.
Yeah.
You can help so many people out if you are able to communicate with all different types of people.
Yeah.
And so if you use those powers for good and you know, it's funny because my son's 8 and I talk to him a lot about this stuff and I talk to him about how important communication is and all those things. And I always tell him that you got to use this stuff for good. Like only use it for good. You know,
tell us more about your relationship with your son.
Oh, it's the best, man. I love being a dad. I really, really enjoy being a dad in the sense of, you know, I used to think that I never wanted kids for a lot of my life.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know. I think that was a maturity thing. I mean, I'm glad I didn't have kids when I was younger because I mean, I wasn't in the spot to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to mold into, I mean, that's how you save the world, to be honest with you. Not by just having kids.
Say that again.
But like, that's how you fix society. That's how you save the world.
I agree with you. I love the way you phrased it.
Is by being able to educate and really grow the next generation in the right way.
Yeah.
And I think that there was a little bit of lost touch and, you know, I've in out there dating, I've talked to girls who are like, I don't want kids and bring them into this world, like bring them into, you know, and they'll talk about all the bad things that are happening in the world. And it's like, no, that's how you save it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to be a part of as many kids' lives as possible. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why I love having a baker's dozen of nieces and nephews. I think we're at 13. Yeah, I think we're at 13. But that's why I love having so many kids in my family is because like, yeah, I'm the fun uncle, but I'm also the uncle that talks to them like human beings, you know?
Sure.
And my brothers and my sister and all my in-laws are amazing. It's really funny. It's really cool watching these big burly construction dudes hold a hold a little baby. Mm-hmm. My brother had a baby. He's 6 months old now, but it's really funny seeing these big burly dudes be like, "Oh my God, give me the baby."
Yeah.
And holding them. But no, man, I mean, I think the relationship with my kid is, it's a balance of being interested in the things that he's interested in. Like, I know not to just be his friend, that I'm his dad.
Yeah.
But there's an element of staying interested in the things that he's interested in. And he's a lot like me, and that's dangerous because it could go either way.
Sure.
Like, you know, and so, but I think it's important to really have a good relationship with your kid.
How do you cultivate that as a father?
I spend a lot of time with them.
Quality time.
And I'm not, you know, it was really hard when I moved out of the same house he was in. It was really hard for me, but it made 110% made me a better dad, because now when I have him, I am 100% present with him, without a doubt. And now when I have him, it's like, I'm not trying to pawn him off on anyone. I'm not trying to say, "Oh my God, I could just use a day without my kids." Like, I am 100% involved in it. You know, I'll give you an example. It was last year, I got an email from his teacher. He was being disruptive, fun trouble, just being a goofball in class, those things. But he was being disruptive. And I had talked to him once before, and then I got another email. And I just was like, kind of the same thing with my stepdad. I was just like, I just got to spend more time with him.
Yeah, draw him in.
Yeah. So I was like, "Hey, man, I'm going to start walking the dog before I take you to school. And you're going to come with me." So every morning before school, we started spending 15, 20 minutes. No TV, no music, no nothing, no rush. You know, it was just a walk with me, him, and my dog. We would just hang out and we would just talk. His behavior improved, clearly.
Of course it did.
You know, because not only are you getting a little bit of exercise in the morning, but then it's just, it's that level, you know. Another time, you know, a few weeks ago, actually, we got another. He's just like me, so he has that fun trouble where he was in music class. Me and his mom got an email from his music teacher about how he was goofing around and all these things. And I was honest with him, and I never want to become that dad where he's afraid to come to me. I never want to be that dad where he feels like he has to lie to me, right? So I asked him about it, and I'm big on, look, every action has a consequence. Sometimes those consequences are good. Sometimes those consequences are bad. Mm-hmm. It's up to you to decide, but you are the only one in control of your actions, right? And I asked him. I read him the email, and he did not want to talk about it. And he knew he was in trouble. He would much rather have me. One time he told me, he's like, "Dad, sometimes I'd rather have you just yell at me and get it over with rather than having to talk about it." I'm like, "I know you would. That's the easy way out. But instead, we're going to sit and have this discussion about it, you know." But I asked him, I said, "Look, is she lying in this email? Because if she's lying, I'll go to the school and confront her on it. Like, if this didn't happen, let me know." Clearly, I knew it happened. We have great teachers. Like, but, you know, I wanted him to see what he said.
Yeah.
I'm like, "Okay, so this did happen." He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Okay, now let's break it down." And we just discussed it, you know. And he tried telling me he was bored. I think that a lot of people say, "Oh, he's bored, so he's acting up." I'm like, "No, I'm not going to buy that, man." A lot of other people, a lot of teachers are going to tell, you know, "He's bored, he needs to do this." It's like, no, man, you're old enough to understand what your actions are.
Yeah.
You know, like.
So he fessed up.
Yeah, he fessed up. And,
nice.
And it's gotten better, you know. And I know that's going to happen again. Here's the thing, is I know, but you just got small little corrections. And again, I just spent more time with them. I just tried to be that role model, right? And so I think a lot of times people, I don't want to say people, I know myself where it would be easier to have someone else do it. Mm-hmm. It'd be easier to punish him or take away his Nintendo or something like that. It's hard to spend time with your kids sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Like, it's hard to sit down, like, instead of banning them from Fortnite or telling them to get off, I sit and I'm like, "Hey, teach me about this game. What's going on with it? I have no idea. You know, what are you interested in? You know, I'm not going to try. I love football. So I want him to sit and watch every Packer game with me, right?"
Yeah.
He's not interested in that. So that's not where our quality time. Now, sometimes he sits and watches it with me because he wants to spend time with me. But I get interested in the things that he's teaching me these things, it's kind of like that's the relationship that we have. And that builds trust. And so then when I talk to him and when I let him know about these things, you know, I introduced, I was like, "Look, man, do you remember when we were in the car and I got a speeding ticket?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Did I argue with the cop?" He's like, "No." And I'm horrible when I get pulled over. "Do you know why I pulled you
that's
over
a great
for?"
Lesson. Yeah.
He's like, you know, cop comes, "Do you know why I pulled you over for?" "Yeah, I was going like 13 over." "Sorry, man."
Yep.
"Can you not give me a ticket?" But I was like, "I didn't argue with the cop. I didn't you know, I didn't bitch and moan about it. I said, yeah, man, I messed up.
Yeah.
I was like, guess what happens when I get too many speeding tickets? I lose my license. He's like, and you can't drive? I'm like, well, I could drive then. Like, I have the ability to drive, but it's illegal. And then I can get into more trouble. I'm like, it all depends on how much trouble I want to get into. I was like, at one point in time, I had to realize that I can't speed. You know, in that particular area, which I think that, you know, the speed limit should be a little bit higher. Speed limit should be the speed I was going. But, but I'm not the one that makes those decisions. So it's kind of one of those things where I had to change my behavior in order to have a different consequence. And so I love it because I can see him learning, right? And so it's really cool. And it's not an experiment. It's one of those things where, trust me, I'm not the perfect dad. So there's a lot of things where, you know, I'll never forget when I was like, hey, man, he asked if he could swear during songs. Like, if he's like, he just asked that.
Yeah.
And he's like, Dad, if it's in a song, can I say the swear word? Sure. I don't care. You know, kind of one of those things.
The green light, huh?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, well, they blank him out on the radio. So here I have my, you know, at the time he was 6 years old. Here I have my 6 year old in the back seat just screaming at the top of his lungs where the radio cuts it off. And I just hear my kids swearing. I was like, and then I was like, hey, Dad made a mistake. No, you can't. Dad made a mistake. You can't do it. I don't like that.
Yeah, good fix. Good fix. Yeah, there's no such thing as a perfect dad.
Yeah.
So I like your rule, though. That's a similar rule we have in our house. Like, if you come to us, you fess up something you messed up on, or if we ask you about it and it's an honest confession, you don't try to hide anything, grace. You're going to get tons of grace. You just brought it into the light, rock and roll. There might still be some consequences, obviously, depending on what happened. But like, we're going to go to bat for you, and it's overall going to be a great experience. If we discover that you were lying or that you were hiding or that you weren't being honest, like, then we're bringing the hammer down. Yeah. That's a 100% big deal. It's kind of like, I don't care how bad it is. Like, Dad, you know, I messed up really bad. We're talking whatever. I don't care. Teen pregnancy, car accident. I was smoking pot with my friends. And you're repentant. And you're like, Dad, please help me fix it. Like, game on. I'm in your corner.
Yeah.
If I have to find out those things and you were trying to hide or lie. Oh.
Yeah. And I think, you know, growing up, like, don't get me wrong. I had great parents.
Yeah.
But I know the fact that of like, if I did one thing, like I was either in trouble or I wasn't.
Yeah.
Right. So once I was in trouble, why not go all the way? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I never wanted that. I always wanted the opportunity to repent. I always wanted that kind of opportunity.
Of course.
So, but yeah, it's an ongoing thing, man.
Yeah, man. Speaking of repent, let's talk about God. For the last few minutes.
Yeah, let's do it.
Sounds like God's been doing some things in your life, Eric, as of recently. And
yeah.
I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. I want our audience to hear about that too, because, you know, a lot of times on this show, we have guys like, you know, like me, kind of grew up in the church, grew up around religion. Even if you didn't like it or believe it or buy into it, it's kind of like, I was raised in it. And then later on, it becomes real. Or you just grew up and you're like, man, I don't remember a day not believing in God.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. I love those stories. Those are great. But you got something a little different. Why don't you share, like, what's been your journey with God and what's your relationship with him look like now?
Yeah. So, you know, growing up when my parents were together, they were religious. We would go to church every Sunday up until I was about 5 years old.
Yeah.
When my parents split up, they still tried. And, I appreciate them for having those values.
Yeah.
But then it was, you know, I was going to a Lutheran church with my mom, and then I was going to a Catholic church with my dad, and I never understood the stuff. And then, like, it was just kind of one of those things where we went to church, you know, and I didn't understand. I knew the story of it all, but as I got older, it just kind of fell off. So I didn't have an opinion on it. Growing up.
Yeah. You know, just kind of like agnostic.
That's kind of where it was.
A practical functioning agnostic. Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of as I got older, I was kind of one of those, like, I don't believe, you know, I don't want to say I don't believe in it, but it was like, I ignored it and I'd question it a lot.
Of course.
And I'd kind of, I don't want to say poke fun, but I would just roll my eyes, you know, at a lot of those situations. But it was one of those things where I would kind of go like, you know, it's whatever. Unless you're real, man. Like, unless you're real. Like, if you're real, we're good, you know? And that's kind of how I lived a lot of it. And then I think the people that, a lot of the people that I was around, they didn't have an opinion on it, or they had strong opinions against it. And so you kind of are who you're with, you know? Yeah. And so I was in that crowd for a very long time. And it just, you know, my kid wasn't baptized. It was just one of those things that wasn't important, right?
Yeah.
And then I was going through a lot, and I met with a guy, and he told me that he's like, you need to have faith in something, you know, something. And that's what he said I should have, faith in something. And
faith then in something. That's all he left it at.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm not telling you you have to go to church. I'm not telling you. He's like, but he's like, you got to believe in something at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay. And so I started following Stoicism a lot. I was always interested in Stoicism. So I thought, you know, Daily Stoic. I was like, all right, I'll read this.
He's it's a big thing lately.
Yeah. And then I met another person. So I felt like, you know, God kept sending these people into my life. And so then at the gym, I was, you know, struck up a conversation with this other dude. He was fully, you know, fully tatted, lifting heavy weights, cool dude. We were talking, and he was a huge Catholic. I was like, man, I keep running into these people that I kind of enjoy and that I like. And then he just goes, you know, man, the Bible is like the greatest self-help book in the world. So even if you don't believe in God, read the Bible, because it's the best self-help book you could ever read. I was like, all right.
Interesting.
So I had a Bible. I tried reading page by page. I was like, this stuff doesn't make any sense. You know? and so it was, I was kind of involved a little bit. And so it was on my mind, right? So it was on my radar. And then there's two different occurrences that really, really kind of made me believe, where it's like, you know, people are looking for this sign, you know? And that's kind of what I was looking for. And I felt lost. I did. I felt lost in life. Like, I knew what I was doing career wise. I knew what I was doing family wise, but like, I was just lost.
Last
within the past year.
Year or so.
Yeah, within the past year.
Did it, in your lostness, did you ever throw up any prayers? I mean, even just half hearted, like, all right, God, if you're real, I need you to show me something.
I believe, here's the thing, is I always believed in myself. Okay. Right? And so, like, I never understood when someone would win a championship and the first thing they do is, you know, thank God. I'm like, you did all that work, man. Mm. Like, you were in the gym, man. Like, you did that. God didn't do that, you know, and that's kind of like where...
You didn't get it.
I didn't get it. I didn't understand it, right? And so I never threw up those prayers like that. I always just worked through it myself. And I always felt like I had more control over my life than anyone else. Mm. Like, and I still, I don't want to say I still believe that. It was just, that's kind of like, as you see these patterns that I talked about my whole life story, it was like, I had control over all those things, control the things you control, right?
Yeah.
So there was a huge dividing line there that I couldn't, you know, really step across. And last year, Labor Day, it was that Monday. And it was kind of funny. I was setting up a squat rack in my garage, and a big metal thing came, and I actually still have, you can see that little scar right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
right on your head.
It knocked, it hit me pretty good. And that was from Labor Day.
Yeah.
So it hit me pretty good. Right. And got a little dizzy. It was fine. But then what happened was I couldn't sleep that night. And it wasn't like, I can't sleep, like I'm rustling around. It was like, I was wide awake.
Mm-hmm.
I was wide awake all night, and I couldn't understand why. Now, I should have been tired. I just got back from a trip from Florida. Like, I hadn't gotten sleep the past few nights. Like, I should be exhausted. And even if I wasn't exhausted, I've always been able to fall asleep around 1-2 o'clock. You know, here we are at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, here, I remember I hit my head. And so what do you do? You start Googling, right? Start Googling.
Is that what you do?
Head injury, can't sleep. Okay, like, oh my God, I'm having an aneurysm, all these things. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But I am wide awake. Now, the next day is my kid's first day at school. And he's at his mom's, but I'm supposed to meet him at the school. So I don't want to go get sleeping medication. It's like, it came to a point where, you know, I just prayed. I didn't know what else to do. I thought I was having an aneurysm. Like, I had no idea.
Wow.
So I prayed. It was a simple prayer. And I just said, look, hey, if you get me through the day and you can get me to my kid's school, like, I'll go to church on Sunday. It was as simple as that.
Yeah.
I wasn't even like, I'll believe in you. I was just like, I'll go to church on Sunday.
I'll go to church. All right.
All right. And so that happened. And it was so weird, because the next day I felt like I was fully rested. Like, I showed up at my kid's school and did all that. And I felt like I was 110% fully rested. And it was the weirdest thing. Cause I was like, I should be, I did not literally slip a wink. Like mm-hmm. I said, this wasn't like I slept an hour, woke up. I had a bed. It was wide awake.
Yeah.
All night to the point where at 4 a.m. Yeah. I got up and I started working, you know, but the next day I was able to do my workout. I was able to do everything. And I was like, that's pretty weird. So I went to church. I went to church that Sunday. I promised. I was like, and I'm a man of my word, you know? So I was like, all right, well, I didn't die. And that's all I asked for.
I told him I would go to church. Yeah. All right.
So I did. And then the messages at church were just, you know, and then I kept thinking back to that like self-help where it was like, hey, like this guy told me that church is the greatest self-help thing. And I'm into self-help.
Bible.
Yeah, the Bible is, you know, and all that. So the messages that I was getting from church were really, really, really well. And I started applying, and they were very relevant to what I was doing.
Yes.
You know? And so I started going and I started going more and more and more in the signs. A quick sign was, I think it was like my third or fourth time. And I don't want to say I started fading, but I was like, okay, these messages are starting to become the same. You know, I was getting into my own head a little bit.
Yeah.
But I showed up at the church and I was really big into the band Korn growing up.
Yeah.
Loved it. Been to a couple of their shows, thought it was great. And I thought it was fascinating that the church I was going to, the pastor went down to Nashville and met with the guitarist of Korn, Head.
Yeah.
And got to tell his story. And so Here I am sitting at church, like thinking that I shouldn't be there. And now I'm like, my favorite band growing up, now he's the pastor that I've been listening to. He's interviewing him and telling him this stuff. I'm like, all right, I'll stick around. Stick around. And so I kept going to church and, you know, started believing more and more and more. And then, you know, this is the last story where I was just like, okay, I'm in. It was January 5th of this year. And I had bought a prayer book where it was like, you know, a daily prayer type thing, like day of the week it is. And the prayer that I prayed was all about humbles. It was all about being humble.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was all about like, you know, please God, give me the opportunity to remain humble. Give me obstacles today to remain humble. And I was like, okay. Kind of thought it was a funny prayer. Like, why would anyone pray for,
why
you know,
would
hard
anyone
obstacles?
Pray for obstacles and humility?
Yeah. And so, you know, it was so funny. It was January 5th of this year. And I take the same walk with my kid every morning. And we did this walk. And I was going to cut through a field. And it was wet that day. And I got my shoes all muddy. Mm. And they were my favorite pair of Converse, all black. It was actually the ones I'm wearing.
Nice.
And so they were all muddy. And I was like, oh, I guess that's the obstacle, right? What am I going to do? So I went home, took my shoes off, and I started washing them. Well, the rag that I grabbed had a bunch of bleach on it. And so I started washing my shoes. Now, you can't even see it because I feel a little bit right there.
Okay.
But I started washing. I was like, oh. I was like, okay, take a deep breath. You know, I was like, oh, you prayed for this, man. Yeah. And I was joking to myself, like literally joking. I was like, you prayed for this, you know. And I still acted good. Just, you know, I left the pair of shoes alone. I was like, maybe just don't deal with this. Maybe, you know, you got other pair of shoes. So I put on a different pair of shoes. I'm on my way to an appointment. I'm going down, 67, heading north. And there's a stall in traffic. And it's right as we're coming up to a highway. There's two people turning ahead of me. And I'm just sitting there. I'm sitting there at a dead stop for 30 seconds. There's no one behind me. And all of a sudden I look in my rearview mirror and there's this kid coming and he is flying. And I'm like, there's two cars ahead of me and we're still stopped. And here's this kid that he's flying. I'm like, oh, he's not stopping. And there's nothing I could do. It's one of those things where I'm staring in my rearview mirror and I could tell this kid's head's down. He's looking at his phone. 45, 50 miles an hour just smacks right at, just rear ends me.
Oh, no.
You know? And so
you got hit hard.
I hit hard, man. And I was okay. He was okay. But, you know, we pulled off to the side and I felt so bad for this kid. Cause he came out, he was crying. He felt so bad.
Oh, he's shook.
He was shook, man. And he was just like,
because you prayed for obstacles.
And now, yeah. Right. And so, you know, we pull over, the guy ahead of me, you know, he thought I was going to be, you know, pissed. He was like, he started calling. I'm like, I'm good, man. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm okay. He's like, I saw it all happen. I'm like, I know I did too. It was in my rearview mirror. And I spent more time calming him down. I was like, hey man, you know what the coolest thing about that was? Is as soon as you hit me, you asked me if I was okay. Mm. I'm like, that shows you who you are as a person, not so much as your driving skills. So, you know, wipe your tears, You're good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he was worried about his dad. You know, cops came and
oh, sure.
All those stuff. Yeah. And he was more worried about his dad. I walked up to his dad. I was like, hey, man, you got a good kid. And his dad was rightfully pissed. I was like, hey, man, you got a good kid. You want to know the first thing that he asked after he hit me? He's like, what? I'm like, he asked if I was okay. He's like, his morals are in the good spot. So I told him, I was like, hey, man, keep your head up, literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. Like, keep your head up in life mm-hmm. and keep your head up when you're driving, please. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I dealt with it very well. And I remember thinking, I was like, you prayed for this, man. Like, you literally prayed for this. And so I got home, you know, I was all right. I was okay. I was a little roughed up, but I got home. And then I got a call from my ex. And we co-parent well. And I respect the hell out of her as a mom. I do. She's a great mom. We didn't work out in a relationship, but she is an amazing mom to my kid. And I couldn't be more grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And she was like, hey, I booked a vacation and I didn't look at the dates. And these are the dates that I booked the vacation. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sitting there. I'm like, yeah, having this day.
You're having a day.
Having a day. And it just so happened to be over Father's Day, my birthday, and my kid's birthday.
Wow.
And I was like, you accidentally booked a trip over these days?
Yeah. How'd you handle that?
You know, it was... I was starting to, I had to remind myself to be humble.
Yeah. You prayed for it.
You know, and it was tough. I mean, looking back, we got into a heavy discussion.
Sure.
You know, there was nothing that I regret about it, but it was left at, I just said, I was like, just whatever. If that's what you want to do, mm-hmm. I'm not going to steal a vacation from my kid, mm-hmm. whatever you want to do. That's how I went to bed. So all of those things happened, and that's how I went to bed. And then, you know, in the time coming, I was able to fix my shoes, just threw them in the washer, and then took black permanent marker.
Yeah.
Cool. New, just as good.
Good as right? new.
Good as new. Turns out I was upside down in my car, and so the best thing that could have ever happened was for someone to hit me and have it be not my fault, because I was about 10 grand upside down on my car and had these heavy car payments.
Yeah, yeah.
So the insurance... got me back to normal.
There you go.
And completely wiped that away.
Wow.
And then I got an email from my kid's mom that said, hey, these are the new dates for the vacation.
All within the day.
All within, you know, the next few
days. The next couple of days.
And I was like, whoa. Thank you. And normally people pray for like, hey, have these things happen to me.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I want to win the lottery. I want this job. I want these things.
Of course.
And I was like, I literally prayed for these bad things to happen to me to show how I handled them. And it was that day. And that's where I was like, okay, all right. Like, you're real. And so that's where I realized, I think the turning point was like, God's always on your side. Mm. And I think that sometimes people forget that, mm-hmm. that like, even when bad things happen, like he's always on your side. There's nothing that you can do where he won't be on your side, mm-hmm. you know? And that's mm-hmm. where I just started believing it. And so then I don't even pray for anything anymore, man. I just let them know I'm grateful. Mm. Like my prayers changed from like, hey, I pray for patience. I pray for this. I pray for that. And you know, like for the past few months,
it's now just what are your prayers?
It's I'm grateful. I pray and I just say, hey man, I just want to let you know I'm grateful today.
That's
like,
awesome.
I'm grateful for this. Like I'm grateful for the opportunities that you've provided. You know, I'm sorry if I didn't take advantage of as much advantage of them as I should have.
Sure.
You know, I'll learn more tomorrow. But it was a turning point where I just realized that he's on my side.
Yeah.
Like, and that's kind of where I'm at with my religion and my relationship with God.
Yeah.
And also like the biggest thing is I think everyone has a different relationship with God. Hmm. You know what I mean?
What do you mean by that?
Like to me, I thought that to be a Christian or to believe in God, that you had to go to church every Sunday and that you had to be, you know, all of these things and worship a certain kind of way.
Yeah.
And what I realized is...
Conform.
Yeah. And what I realized is that everyone has their own personal relationship with God. Like, your relationship with God is your own relationship with God. My relationship with God is my own relationship with God. And however I want to worship him. So... I feel good when I go to church because I enjoy the messages and I enjoy being around people mm-hmm. that have the same ideas as me. You know what I mean? But I don't have to do and say every, you know what I mean? Where I look at it as I'm a really good human. I know kind of the philosophy of it all. And it goes back to, you know, that guy saying, have faith. And then another guy saying, the Bible is like the best self-help book you could ever have.
Sure.
And then you tie that into having your own relationship with God. And if you take those three things, it's like, whoa, like, how can you argue with that? You know what I mean? Like, it's a hard thing to argue with.
Yeah. It's pretty obvious. God's trying to do some cool things in your life.
Yeah.
It's you're listening. Yeah. I love that,
and I think
I love that.
That was like for me, that was a huge turning point.
Yeah.
It was like I said, January 5th, like all these things happen. And I was kind of like, at the end of the day, I was like, what the fuck was that for, man? You know, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I don't want all that. And then the next coming day I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it, man. And if you read the Bible and if you start doing those things,
mm-hmm.
that helps you.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so it's kind of one of those things where it was like...
It's just in doing those things, it's like, oh man, those things are hard. Like,
oh, yeah.
I prayed for patience. I just thought you were going to like pour a little bottle of patience into my soul.
I thought you were just going to give it to me.
And I would wake up tomorrow, I'd be a more patient person. Yeah. Like, the way he makes you more patient is by putting you through adversity that tests your patience.
And I think, yeah, 100%. Right? And same things, like I used to pray for discipline all the time.
Oh.
Where I was like, give me discipline. Like I need to be more disciplined. And then like there would be just opportunities that he would provide that I was forced to be disciplined.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Like, of course.
I had to be disciplined in myself because there was literally no other option. You know what I mean? Get off the phone. AT&T, you know, I don't want to spend so much time on my phone. I need to be more disciplined and not have my face in the screen. Okay, we're going to dismantle the AT&T towers for half a day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was another thing where I laughed because the night
was that
before,
something that happened to
you? Yeah. It was like one of those things where I was like, I need to get off the screen time so much of being on my phone. And then it was like, I remember the next morning I was in my car. I was like, nothing's working. You know? And I was like, okay. And I just, you know, it's, if you look for it, it's there.
Yeah.
Like that. I think that's the biggest thing that I realize is if you look for it, it's there. And I think just real quick, you know, before we finish up is I had a hard time realizing if I was just like, have you ever heard of Raz, where if it's like you look for a green car, if you think of a green car, you can see a green car, right?
Oh yeah.
And so like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, there's opportunity. And so I think that a huge part of me was like hard, where it's like, yeah, if I look for those things, they're going to be there. And it changed from if you're just open to them.
Mm.
Like if you're just open to the opportunities that he provides, they're there.
Yeah.
You don't have to look for them. You just have to be open to them.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, that was kind of a...
Well, didn't Jesus say, ask and it will be given to you? Knock and the door will be open to you. Seek and you will find. Like, it's in there, man.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
in there.
Yeah.
So I'm not opposed to looking and
yeah.
seeking. But yeah. I like what you're talking, I think, more about the state of our hearts being soft and yeah. like receptive and yeah. maybe letting God determine what's best for me
yeah.
most days would be a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Like, well, I think I know what's best for my life. And then you start treating God like a genie,
yeah.
you know, oh, I want A, B, C, D and, in Jesus' name, amen.
Yeah.
Right. And that's how faith should work, right?
Yeah.
Come on. I said the prayer. I went to church. Yeah. I rubbed the lamp. Give me what
I've been really good this week.
Yeah. And I think the gospel really is more about God's goodness.
Yeah.
Like, no. You guys actually aren't that good. You're pretty messed up. But God is good and he loves you anyway.
Yeah.
Right? And that's where, like, if you just surrender to that,
yeah,
he will do incredible things.
Yeah. And it kind of goes back to, he's on your side, man. Like, I remember I say that to myself all the time. Like, he's on your side.
Hmm. Yeah.
he's not against you. That's,
right.
that's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
You know, he's definitely on your side. And so that's the relationship that I have with him. And that's kind of... You know, it's been an interesting year because, like I said, it went from almost arguing points against it, because I do like to play kind of like the opposite of like,
yeah.
let's look at things a different way. And it was hard for me to be, you know, really into all the self-help things and really try to build myself as a human being and yeah. deny that.
Got it.
Know? And so, yeah, that's how I got into it. And I'll be honest, like I never thought I'd be where I'm at now. You know, yeah. like I said, I wake up every morning surprised and so grateful that I do Workforce Renegades for a living. That I do something that I absolutely love.
And I love that, man.
This is what I'm doing, you know. So yeah,
let's actually end our episode there. Workforce Renegades. Can you tell the audience where to find that? We do have entrepreneurs. We do have small business owners that listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, what's the best way to get a hold of you and find more about,
find
out more about Workforce?
You can go to workforcerenegades.com.
Yeah.
That's the website. Otherwise you can find me online. I post way more on just my personal. It's Eric Forstall. You can find me on Facebook. You can either follow me or send me a friend request.
Yeah.
I mean, I love talking about this stuff, so I am always, always open for a cup of coffee. I'm always open for a phone call.
Yeah.
I love it. And if I can help anyone try to deliver whatever message that they're trying to deliver, I mean, it could be in your personal life, it could be for your business, your organization, but, shoot me an email, eric@workforcerenegades.com. All those ways. I'm pretty responsive.
Yeah. I love it. Hey, Eric, thanks for being on the show, man. One of my prayers is that God continues to do some pretty radical stuff in your life, but hopefully not involving car accidents moving forward. You know what I'm saying?
Hey man, if that's what it is, that's what it
but
is.
I like your prayer. If that's what is required for you to get a hold of more of my heart, God, like whatever.
Yeah, just got to be open to it, man.
Yeah.
He's on your side.
Dude, amen. He's on your side. All right. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.